always look on the bright side of
Come
life.
Come on, whistle.
Always Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Luff. It's Wendy Snyder. All kinds of things to talk about on today's show. Yeah, we'll get to the Cubs. We'll get to some local news, some national news. But first, Eric Idle is coming to town. He will be in town on Saturday, October the 6th, this upcoming Saturday, at Pfeiffer Hall at North Central College. We'll give you all the ticket information in just a little bit. Eric Idle joins us right now. Mr. Idle, both Wendy and me, huge fans of yours and of Monty Python's. There will be some gushing. My question is, how much gushing is too much gushing?
I think no gushing, no drooling. I think it's the two very important keys.
All right, no gushing nor drooling. All right,
it is such a pleasure and an honor to meet you. I'm going to start out by saying I watched Monty Python. I was pretty young when it came on. My sister's a little older than I am, and I would just laugh when she and my mom laughed because I had a tough time understanding the accent.
Oh, well, that's good.
And
well,
then
I married a girl from Chicago, so I've taught her all about the accent.
Oh, well, good. And to this day, we still have a penguin on our television because of that sketch.
Oh, that's really good.
What's on the telly? I do believe it's a penguin.
Is it hard for
you? I hope it doesn't explode.
No, it doesn't. It's cast iron.
Is it hard for you to believe that all took place quite a while ago, or does it seem like it just happened?
Kind of like a strange dream. I mean, it happened so long ago, a lot of it. I mean, next year is the 50th anniversary of Monty Python first appearing on British television, of first doing the shows. And that is in a very, very long time. So it is it's amazing that people still laugh at it and still find it enjoyable.
We talked to Bob Odenkirk yesterday, who is going to be doing a little Q&A with you at Pfeiffer Hall, North Central College. And
in Naperville, which... Naperville.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yes.
Where I've never been.
Oh.
Never?
I had never met him, but he grew up in Naperville, and he's flying all the way there just to talk to me because he was such a Python freak at 10 years old. And he said his entire career, like Mr. Show, is entirely based on Monty Python. And so he's actually flying all the way in from L.A. just to have a chat with me, which is very nice of him.
And when we spoke to him yesterday, he was saying that you were always the happy one and John Cleese was always the cranky one in the Monty Python's Flying Circus. Would you agree with that?
I think so, yes. I'm like a cheery optimist, you know. I mean, even when being crucified, you sing Always Look on the Bright Side.
Right.
That's optimism taken to a little bit too far.
Eric, when I was in college... I just wanted to say, when I was in college, my friends and I went to see Graham Chapman speak, and Graham Chapman taught us that the writing at Monty Python, although we always visualize all of you being together in a room around a table, it was rarely, if ever, that way. Is that right?
Well, we wrote in individual groups, and then we would be together to read it out. And when we put the shows together all around one table. So we go away, right, then every 2 weeks we come back and read all the stuff to each other to try and make each other giggle.
Yeah.
And then we start assembling the shows all together. We did do the certain amount of rewriting and links and, you know, writing. Terry Gilliam will go from here to there, and let's leave it for him.
But everyone's style was pretty different, wasn't it? Even though you guys meshed together so beautifully, your styles were very different.
I think the writing styles are quite different. And what you don't realize when you're watching the show is that there's a different writer on here, and there's a different writer. That's Cleese and Chapman. That's Palin and Jones. That's me. Obviously, it's obvious when Gilliam comes on because there's a lot of explosions and animations. But... but I think that's one of the things that Python has. It is a sort of encyclopedia of comedy. There's all sorts of different forms of it. You know, there's visual, there's witty, there's linguistic, and you know, and parody. I think it is a portmanteau kind of comedy.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to decide who makes a prettier woman, you or Michael Palin.
Oh.
I don't think you should even be asking me that sort of question.
Eric, a couple weeks ago, Chevy Chase blasted Saturday Night Live. He said it's not as good as it used to be. Is comedy as good as it used to be right now? What do you think?
Oh, I think so. I think there's some really funny people around. And, I think comedy is actually more important these days because ever since, like, the Bush era, and particularly particularly now in this disastrous era, mm-hmm. people get their news from comedy. I mean, my wife watches every night The Daily Show, Colbert, Seth Meyer. She has to watch that as a counterbalance to what's going on. So I think people get their news from comedy now, which is quite an interesting new phenomena of this of the millennia, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of teenage boys, and that's where they get all their news. Definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's quite healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's when times are mad, best go to the comedians.
Right. To balance it out. Do you think the British approach to comedy and the American approach to comedy are drastically different?
It's hard to say. I mean, we did Brexit, you had Trump. I think they're both going down the same disastrous path.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
And I just saw you recently on the James Corden show where you came in to help him with exactly this, trying to, you know, it's so tough to be funny these days.
But they wrote that. It was just wonderful. I had so much fun doing it. I mean, I wandered in, and they had all these singers and dancers.
It was pretty great.
And a set, and pyro, and all set. It was really the most fun I've ever had, I think, on a talk show.
We're talking.
I didn't have to talk.
we're talking to Eric Idle. He'll be in town Saturday in Naperville at 7 o'clock, Pfeiffer Hall at North Central College. What do you think, Eric, is the quintessential Monty Python moment? There's so many great scenes, so many great characters, but if you just had to close your eyes and think about the best moment of Monty Python, what would it be?
We had to choose our best favorite sketches, and oddly for a little sort of video, DVD, and we all chose different sketches, except we all chose one the same, and that was the fish slapping dance.
Yep. Beautiful.
And that to me was quite significant. I think that is the silliest possible thing we ever did.
You know, there's so many moments from Monty Python that when you just say them, you go, well, why would a guy do that? Why would a guy slap a guy with another fish? Or I always think about Confuse a Cat, yeah. Where for people who haven't seen Confuse a Cat, it's grown people trying to make cats think better, and they're confused by it. But what's the magic that makes those moments happen? What is that magic all about?
I think it's a taking absurdity seriously and applying it to possibly potentially vaguely real life situations. Like your cat's annoying you. Well, let's confuse it. You know.
Yeah.
I think it's always taking it very seriously. So the Ministry of Silly Walks is really trying to tighten its belt and get everything it possibly can get done, except it is based on an absurdity. And that's never recognized. Wait a minute, this is absurd.
Right.
I love that. You, of course, had a very close and lengthy friendship with George Harrison. When did you guys first meet?
Well, about 1975. In Hollywood, in LA. It was a screening of The Holy Grail.
He was a huge fan of yours, wasn't he?
He was a big Python fan, and he had a great... I mean, all the Beatles have a fantastic sense of humor. They've just got... I think that's why they were so successful in America, because of their humor. I mean, everybody loved Ringo. But immediately, everybody knew his name first.
Right.
When they first hit the airport, they were just funny. And I think that there was a lot in common, because we were all the same age. We were all the same age group, born in the war, you know. So we were making a world that wasn't really there. We were inventing a world. There was a kind of renaissance going on in the 60s of everybody making up stuff. And that I think that was wonderful times.
Now, because everything comes full circle, you guys paid tribute to them in the Ruddles. I told Bob Odenkirk this yesterday. For my money, it's the best parody of anything I've ever seen. The Ruddles is just perfect in my mind.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's also the world's first mockumentary, by the way.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah.
That's kind of nice. And it was made for NBC. I mean, when Lorne Michaels produced it, so we actually put it out in America. And there were a lot of those early Saturday Night Live people in, you know, Belushi, Bill Murray's in it, Dan Aykroyd's in it, Gilda Radner's in it. So all of that early cast, all of them whom I loved, because I did SNL in the 70s about four times. And they were very, very wonderfully funny people. They were very nice.
Yeah.
Mainly from Chicago.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you're in Chicago? You said your wife's from here. Do you have some special places you go to when you're here?
I have... Well, I mainly in the burbs because my sister-in-law lives there. I have two brothers-in-law. I have nieces and grandnieces. I have a very big extended family there, which has been very lovely for me, you know, to just have a normal American family. Well, I say normal, they're all bizarre.
Are people shocked when they see you in the suburbs of Chicago just shopping or something? Are they shocked that it's you?
Isn't that Eric Idle at Oakbrook?
Well, yes, I know Oakbrook very well.
Yes.
It's Western Springs, you know. I love Chicago. We opened Spamalot there.
Yeah.
Deliberately, it was my call. I said, no, we have to open in Chicago. They're so crazy, they take their shirts off in winter. And also, they don't care about New York. Whereas Boston, you know, has a sort of cultural cringe.
Sure.
So I said, we must open in Chicago, because if we're funny there, we'll be funny everywhere. And that was true. They gave us a huge reception, and it just put us on the road to Broadway and everything.
Well, I live in LaGrange, so when you're in town...
You can stay with Wendy.
Know, yeah. Yeah, we're a couple towns over.
You can stay with Wendy if you want, Eric. Are you up for that?
I have a puppy.
That's very kind of you. I'll ask my wife. Is that okay?
Sure. She can come, too.
Eric, I regret having to bring this up, but I'm so curious. I know that Terry Jones has had some serious health issues of late. Have you been to see him? How's he holding up?
I haven't seen him for a little while, but unfortunately he has that sort of Alzheimer's thing, you know, dementia.
Yeah.
And so he has to have 24-hour care, and he can't really speak. You know, he's sort of still vaguely in there. You see who he is, and he knows who you are, but conversation is not possible, which is sort of is very sad.
Sure.
It's horrible, actually.
Such a nice man. Well, I was fortunate enough to interview him a few...
I mean, if only it had been Terry Gilliam, we wouldn't have minded if he shot up.
Oh no! we had him on.
It could have been Michael Palin. That would have been a boon for all of us.
That would have been better. All right, that's fair. He was up in the studio a couple of years ago, and such an incredibly nice man. And I have to ask you this: he said, because I said, what was it like when you were in the middle of Monty Python and you would go someplace and people would see you guys? And he said it was no big deal. Nobody really cared. Is that possible?
This is Palin said that.
Terry Jones.
Terry Jones said that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He must have forgotten, because when we went to Canada, they went completely crazy, and that was quite early, 1974.
Yeah.
And when we opened the movie in New York, we were surrounded. It was like Beatlemania. But I think when we were out on our own, you know, not in a group, and people don't know it's us there.
Yeah.
Then yes, we're pretty normal, and you can get on with your life, and you can carry on shopping.
And that's all that matters.
Bothered.
Yeah, that's good.
The big question this morning was whether or not you were going to shower before you got on the phone with us. Did you shower or not?
No, I wrote very specifically to you, I'll take a bath. I'm an English person, you know. And I took a bath, and then I couldn't decide what to wear, so I thought I'd do the interview naked.
Oh.
Because it is radio, and there are some advantages to being on the radio.
No one told you we were Skyping this, Eric?
Yeah, everyone can see Eric.
I don't think so. That's very sweet of you. Somebody tweeted me this morning, some nice lady, and asked me if she really loved me. She said, can I be your friend with benefits?
Oh,
and
wow.
And said, that's very sweet of you. I already have Medicare.
Eric, I hope you take this the right way. It's just something I need to say to you for all the years and all the laughs. Thank you, sir, because you really you made young people realize that comedy could go in a very different direction, and you guys pulled it off beautifully every single time.
You know, that's very sweet, and it's probably the most common thing said to me on pass on in airports and things. People just so smile and they go thank you, and that's really one of the that's really like a blessing from people. It's very nice. You know, it's not like rock and roll where they try and jump on you or try and kill you. they smile, and you, God knows what they're remembering. You're dressed as something really bizarre in their memory as they think of you. But I do like that. It's a very nice thing at our age. It is very sweet.
You are going to have such a good time, just such a good time with Bob Odenkirk. This is all happening Saturday night, 7 o'clock, Pfeiffer Hall at North Central College. It's through Anderson's Bookshop. workshops. It's in Naperville. Eric Idle will be in Naperville for the first time ever. And talking about your new book, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, and talking with Bob Odenkirk, and I'm guaranteeing he's going to gush all over you, too.
Get used to it.
Well, yeah, he's very nice. We had dinner, and I said, he started to ask me questions. I said, don't ask me questions. Let's just save it for live. Let's have a live conversation.
Smart move.
Because I don't like things being set up too much. So we'll improvise. Maybe there'll be a rude song or two. And hopefully the people from Fermi will come in, so we'll have an intelligent crowd.
Eric, keep up the great work. We love you, sir.
Oh, thank you. And I love Chicago. And if any of my relatives are listening in, I'm looking forward to seeing you for dinner. It's going to be fun.
Beautiful.
Thank
Eric Idle,
so
everybody.
Thank
the great
you.
Eric Idle.
Sure.
Again, the show is Saturday, this upcoming Saturday at Pfeiffer Hall at North Central College. Tickets available at ericidleandersons.brownpapertickets.com. A quick break. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Welcome to Prince Spaghetti Day.
You might have to, I get it, but you may have to explain.
Well, it's in honor of Prince, the artist formerly known as Prince.
In every way.
And it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
And in the olden days, Wednesdays was Prince Spaghetti Day,
right.
And the woman would lift up the window and yell, Anthony!
Yep.
Pasta! Come get it!
On the west side of Boston, Anthony Martignetti's mother calls for him.
Right.
Yeah, he would hear her all the way across town in Boston.
So as a tribute to my Italian heritage and to Prince, it's Prince Spaghetti
How
Day.
How about that? By the way, I'm sad. There's no way to sugarcoat that. For many Cubs fans, the last couple of days have not been very pleasant, capped off by a, spoiler alert, a 13th inning loss yesterday.
Can I just say, I heard Mary Sandberg Boyle on the Steve Cochran show yesterday say, I hope it just goes quickly because I don't want to have to stay up. Is it better or worse for a Cubs fan? Isn't this more heartbreaking that it went longer and almost happened? I feel so bad for you guys.
I didn't enjoy a single part of last night.
You know what's weird, Steve, is I did, but as the opportunities kept piling up and piling up, because in the last several innings, they had a chance pretty much every inning.
7, 8, and 9,
where a base hit would win it, and they didn't. And then your head is going, well, are these the Cubs who let stuff like this beat them, or are these the Cubs who, like during the World Series year, somehow find a way? And as it turned out, they did not find that way.
I said earlier, the whole feeling of last night reminded me of Game 7 in 2003, after the foul ball game.
Yes.
When, you know,
against Florida.
And Cubs had been up 3-1 in the series, right? Was
yeah.
it 3-2, 3-1?
Yeah.
And the Game 7, they still, you know, just had to win one game. But the wind was gone out of the sails, and I just feel like, that there was that
right.
feeling
that kind
of waiting
specter.
For something to go wrong rather than charging forward to get something to go right. Not with the players. I mean, they're professionals. They're fine. But
right.
just,
right.
I guess, the atmosphere in my easy chair was very uneasy.
No, I get it. It was an uneasy chair.
Right. Can you explain the Javi Baez hugging? Because you talked
no
about
No one
it.
Can explain
well,
it.
Well, I don't even know what
we
happened.
We can describe it,
okay.
but you can't explain it. Wilson Alvarez is batting. There's men at first and second. There's one out. The ball's hit to Nolan Arenado, who's the third baseman for the Rockies. And as Javi Baez is trying to reach third, Nolan Arenado is there at third with the ball, and he has a few options. He can try for the double play, or he can tag the oncoming runner, Javi Baez. And what happened was he did tag him, but their bodies were moving toward each other. And you know what happens when two people fall in love, Wendy?
No,
you,
come
just,
on.
You just they embraced.
So they
hugged.
So they came close accidentally, and Javi just decided, hey, I'll hug you.
I'm here, you're here. How about a hug? So the problem with that was
the play live?
Yes.
You know what they say, Wendy, if you can't be with the one you love.
Right.
You love the one you're with.
Love the one you're with, and if it's
with
Nolan Arenado, right? Glove love. They were practicing glove love. What's
but
wrong with that?
So the play was not was still active. The
yeah, that's the
wrong.
Issue. Is that although everybody last night was putting it all on Javi Baez going, you don't hug a guy during a play, but their bodies were just pulled toward each other because of the direction they were both going in, and Nolan Arenado pretty much was half of that hug. He wasn't stopping it. He was like, oh, all right, well. I'm here, you're here.
Was he out or safe?
Javi Baez was out, but the argument that they were making, the Rockies, was that maybe he could have tagged Javi Baez and without a hug, thrown it onto second base or first base. Because at that point, you didn't know Wilson Contreras, the Cubs catcher, had injured his leg. You didn't know if Wilson Contreras could run to first base. So he could have potentially doubled him up, gotten a double play. It ended up not mattering. You know, and in the long run, it ended up not mattering. The hard thing was watching the Milwaukee Brewers 2 days ago celebrate there at Wrigley Field. Last night, watching the Colorado Rockies celebrate. Tonight, the winner of Oakland and New York is flying to Chicago to celebrate at Wrigley Field. This has got to stop. We can't every day host a party for whoever wins a series. That's not right.
A buddy of mine who was at the game with his wife last night pointed that out, and I was with him on Saturday. And so this couple, my friends... They saw two catchers' interference calls in two games in a row.
Which is, one is rare.
Rare. I think I only saw one in my life was the one Saturday.
Yeah. One is rare, but two in as many games. There were a lot of breaks that honestly went the Cubs' way. At some point, Chris Bryant hit a routine pop-up to right field that a guy overran. There were a series of things where you go, okay, fate is kind of on our side somehow. I don't know how, but it is. The catcher's interference, there were a couple of others. But in the long run, they just, when they needed a timely hit, and there were so many chances for that timely hit, they just couldn't get one.
Also, that call at first when Zobrist was called out.
Pickoff
play, and they reversed that call on him.
Right.
Yeah, but they should have reversed the double play.
They should have, indeed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Would it have made any difference in the outcome?
Well, we don't know, because there would have been another out, a guy on base.
Yeah, yeah. So it's sad for so many reasons.
What's the problem? Have they just not been hitting?
No.
There was a graphic they kept showing that said that other than the Baltimore Orioles, who will go down as one of the worst teams in baseball history this year, they just couldn't get anything going. The Cubs had, did they say 39 games, Steve, where, they only scored one or zero runs 38 or 39 times during the season, including last night. And it's amazing. I mean, for most of the season, they had the best record in the National League. So to have a stat like that.
Up until the last day.
What do you attribute that
to? The day after the last day.
Right.
What could that, I mean, they're great ball
You know what I think
players.
It is, Wendy, seriously? Nematodes. Don't count out the nematodes. Those guys ruin everything. It was, I don't know, it was so demoralizing. And then in your head, you're doing the what-if game. Oh, what if we had won one more game during the season? And what if we had one more hit in this game? So that's playing constantly.
Good news. Hockey starts Sunday.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Hockey starts tomorrow.
Well, home game Sunday, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the Blackhawks.
And the Bears are doing good.
Yeah,
Bears are
see?
Doing fine.
There's some happiness out there.
There is.
Chicago is playing in Milwaukee this week. It's just the Bulls.
Oh. Yeah.
Why am I not more into basketball? I loved basketball. I played basketball in high school.
Yeah.
I'm just ashamed that I'm not more into the Bulls. Ever since Michael left, that was it.
I have found myself with basketball, and people have been saying this for years, but I'm really finding it to be true, that if you just watch the last 3 minutes of a game, you're good. I know that sounds horrible because I love baseball. And baseball
you do that with the Bears,
baseball
don't
went
you?
5 hours yesterday, yeah. And I was fine with it. I would have gone another 20 or 30 minutes easily. But for some reason in basketball, if you really just sit down for the last 2 or 3 minutes, you kind of get it. You kind of see what you need to see.
Well, you miss a lot of action if you do that.
You miss a lot of action. But the important scoring really takes place at the very end of the game.
What if people did that with our show? Just listen to the last 3 minutes.
Well, you don't really deliver in the last 3 minutes with the NBA.
No, not at all.
Ha ha ha. Give me a hug, Javi.
He should open up a hugging booth at state fairs and stuff.
He may have some time to do that.
Yeah, plenty of time to do that. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more of this. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. Give us a hug. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Hoedown with the Annie Moses Band. This is based on Aaron Copland's Hoedown from Rodeo.
I know. Everyone knows that.
All right, who wants to go see PBS, one of PBS favorites? I love this part. I can't talk over it.
This part?
It's What's for Dinner.
I was just going to say, I know this from somewhere. Why do I know this? You're right.
Steak.
Beef.
Yeah, beef.
It's What's for Dinner.
Robert Mitchum.
All right, well, one of PBS favorites, the Annie Moses Band, straight from Carnegie Hall and the Grand Ole Opry. Howdy?
No, you gotta make that last longer. Do it longer.
Howdy!
That's it. That Minnie Pearl. What a performer.
These are six siblings who have an eclectic mix of vocals, string playing. They're going to be performing at the Mac Theater at the College of DuPage this Saturday, October 6th. You can get tickets online at themac.org. Call 630-942-4000. Or we have a couple of pairs to give away. Should we just give them away today so people can make arrangements?
Yes.
Oh, two separate?
Oh, then no. I changed my mind.
Let's do one pair today and one pair tomorrow.
All right.
This is really cool.
That seems fair. All right.
I love fiddles.
Are you a big fiddle fan?
Yeah.
Yeah?
This is music to my ears, and it's very difficult to play. Have you ever tried to play a violin or a fiddle?
No. Uh-uh.
It takes a lot of practice to make it sound like a dead cow when I played it. It was...
I can't play a kazoo. Too hard.
Sixth caller right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Caller number six gets a pair of tickets to see the Annie Moses Band straight from Carnegie Hall and the Grand Ole Opry. They'll be at the Mac Theater, Mackinich Arts Center at College of DuPage this Saturday night, October 6th. That's why caller six.
Do you think people will be yelling all through the concert, play What's for Dinner? We want to hear What's for Dinner. All right, we'll play What's for Dinner. Wendy, here is the most venomous text that we've received so far. I believe it's because the movie Venom is opening on Friday, so some of the texts are very venomous. You know what the Cubs losing last night feels like, and then the answer is normal.
Ouch. I didn't even text
honest,
that in.
That hurts just a little bit.
I was going to wear my Sox sweatshirt today. I thought that would be mean again, so I didn't.
That would have been so cruel.
I didn't. Sue from Chicago is going to go see one of PBS favorites, the Annie Moses Band, live in action. If you didn't win tickets, listen tomorrow because we have another pair of tickets, or you can get your own at themac.org or call 630-942-4000.
Congratulations.
Sue from Chicago.
Play What's for Dinner. That's what the people want to hear. I would close with that. I'd make them wait. And then
that's pretty great.
Close with it. What's for dinner?
That is so energetic. Can we talk to Sarah? I don't know if we should do this, but let's do it. Hey, Sarah. Uh-oh.
I had to put a little damper on my day. This is a sweet, sweet day. It feels like the world has, you know, come back a little bit because it's so chaotic or whatever. My favorite words, wait till next year. We'll get you next year. Bounce back here. Cubs got bounced. Wendy, I know you're a diehard Sox
fan.
But I'm not as mean as you.
Wendy, I'm not being mean. Take a side. You know it's true. Those losers are nothing but a bunch of bedwetters. They're fans. It's unbelievable. I feel like it's like New Year's.
Sarah, I got to talk you down a little bit because we as Sox fans have nothing to be proud of for this season.
Hey. We did all right this season.
No, we did not.
Yes, we did. We're in a rebuilding. And we are going to be so good next year. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for the opening day.
You just blasted the Cubs for their wait till next year attitude, but you're using wait till next year as your positiveness.
No, we knew we were in a rebuilding year. The Cubs are cocky. The fans are cocky. They feel like they're entitled or whatever.
And bedwetters.
You are who you are. Wait till next year. We'll get you next year. If you ever say anything in a joking manner to a Cubs fan, they just go ballistic. It's so funny. It's unbelievable. Just their whole demeanor, their attitude, they got exactly what they deserve. They can't produce. They're not as good as they think they
are. Sarah, I'm just going to leave you out because I sound nicer in comparison to you.
When you put on that White Sox sweatshirt or T-shirt or whatever, you need to pick a side.
I picked a side.
The Bears play. Yeah, okay, but you're always giving credit to those losers.
All right.
Sarah, leave your phone number if people want to reach you. What's your phone number?
It's 312.
She makes me look like Mother Teresa.
That's why I should hang with her, because, you know, she wouldn't be my wing girl. She
wow.
would be. Sarah, thank
all
you for
anger.
Calling. You know, I felt really bad for Cubs fans, but there was a little relief in me that it was over.
When Sarah started, I thought she must be a Rockies fan, right?
Yeah.
Because she's so happy. And then I go, no, either a Cardinals fan or a Brewers fan. And then I went, oh, no, this is local. She's a White Sox fan.
And, you know, listen, I talk a tough talk, but when it comes down to it.
You would have been okay with the Cubs winning. You didn't want them to win
okay.
the World Series.
Right. I flat out said that.
You wanted them to win a playoff series or two, but
sure.
just short of the World Series.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel bad for Cubs fans today.
It's a rough day. Rough night, rough day.
And that's where I stop talking.
Yep.
I feel bad for Cubs fans.
Yep.
How I feel doesn't matter.
Do you think if Javi Baez had hugged Sarah, she would feel differently?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. That's what he needs to do today, is go door to door and hug the people that need a hug. Make all the difference in the world.
And then maybe people stop wetting their bed.
To be fair, she called the Cubs bedwetters. Only two of the Cubs are bedwetters. Let's be honest.
And one of them spent half the season at
AAA. Right, right. So you can't pin this on bedwetting. That's not fair.
Wow, I really do look like a choir girl
yes.
next to her. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, you do.
All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening here, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy.
Does that hurt when you
no,
do that? No,
it does not hurt.
That's amazing.
We are joined in the studio by one Dane Neal, host of On the Road with Dane Neal, that you can
yes.
hear Saturdays from 2 to 4. I enjoy listening to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate you listening to it. People are...
It's okay.
Thanks for tolerating it, Phil.
You're welcome. No, it's always fun to listen to.
One thing
Big
that,
day tomorrow, Dane.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I know everybody's prepping. People are kind of laying out their outfits and trying to figure out exactly how to best celebrate National Taco Day. It is tomorrow. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. we celebrate the day on the day that we're here. And I know, and I get a lot of emails, texts, that people feel kind of caught off guard.
Yeah, well, for those of us, because we always celebrate it Taco Day Eve, and that's tonight.
Yeah, right. What, it's Flan Day? Oh.
What, do you have taquitos?
Yes, we do.
In preparation for Taco Day?
Yes, we sure do.
Yeah. So, now, the taco is one of those foods that, you know, America, the great melting pot. We enjoy the delicacies from around the world. But think about this. You think about, you know, hamburgers, hot dogs, apple pie, all those kind of things that are in the team photo of what is American. But the taco is really, I mean, there are few foods that you can name off. Maybe pizza would be one where I think universally you get a positive response. You can just come up to someone and say, like, tacos?
Right.
And who's going to say no to yes, that? People just light
up. In fact, I think it is a therapy. Is that true? Yeah, I think
I didn't know that.
If it's not, it should be.
It should
right?
be. But you know what? Much like pizza, because everybody's take on tacos is so different, you could have them 2, 3, 4 days a week and get a different flavor depending on where you go, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? It's the kind of thing where you know, just the word, it means what it means and people understand it, but it can take on so many different forms, much like the Wonder Twins with, like,
on Super Friends.
Was that like Gleek and,
yeah.
and Jane?
All right, back to the subject here. You know, so if you can't decide what to order and you're at home, a lot of times you'll order a pizza. I think the tacos is getting very close to bypassing a pizza for me.
Mm.
Tacos are magical.
They are in a bunch of different ways, the ways that you can kind of customize them and have them your own way, plus just the way that people enjoy them. I know off the air we were talking, you know, that controversy, the ever-raging controversy of the corn tortilla or the flour tortilla. At our house, you know, Esther, she loves corn tortillas. I'm more of the flour tortilla
sure.
person.
You're more of a flour.
That's what makes your relationship work, though, I think.
I can branch out. You know, in the history of the taco, you think about it, it's the kind of thing that you feel like it's been around forever. But even in Mexico, they said that, you know, it's maybe 1700s. You know, this
yeah.
isn't something that's been around forever and ever and ever. And, of course, here in America, you know, the early 1900s, you know, Mexican workers who were working railroads and mines would bring some of that food with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it became sort of a you know, something that you saw in America in the 20s and then in the 40s with Taco Bell, right? And that kind of changed what we thought about it, right? The Americanization.
Sure did, Dane.
I like Taco Bell. I got to be honest with you. I like Taco Bell. I'm not saying it's authentic, but it's, you know, sometimes it's a good little treat.
Yep.
Well, when it comes to tradition and it comes to Chicago here in Pilsen, we've got Carnitas Hurapan, and they have been doing it and doing it right in Pilsen for 40-plus years, and Marcos Carbajal is here, highly acclaimed and doing it right authentically on the Carnitas side. Marcos, welcome to WGN.
Happy Taco
great
Day.
Great to be here. Thank you. I do not like Taco Bell, for the record.
Is it out of principle?
It's a little of both.
But see, you're used to authentic stuff. Like, I'm Italian. Pizza Hut isn't really Italian pizza, but
100%.
It hits the spot sometimes.
It hits the spot. It has its time and its place, and it fills that a need at 3 in the morning when everything else is closed.
Right. So.
Marcos, in Los Angeles a couple years ago, my daughter and I were there looking at colleges, and we were in a very, very Mexican neighborhood where there was one authentic Mexican restaurant after another, and right in the middle of all that was a Taco Bell doing pretty good business, and I was amazed by that. I couldn't believe that in an authentic Mexican neighborhood, they would still be holding their own.
Well, I think sometimes people revert back to what they know.
And, no, you're right.
You know, a big national brand like that, you know, people are familiar with, don't have to think too much about, don't have to be pushed outside their comfort zone.
Right.
You know, there's always going to be, a market for that.
Sure.
And I didn't know that you could go outside the box and have so many different things on tacos. I was very unschooled in Mexican food. I really was at first. My husband liked it, so then I'm like, oh, wow, you can get pork tacos? I didn't know.
Well, in a place like Chicago, such a city with such a big booming Mexican community, you know, you can get all kinds of regional specialty tacos, because really the taco in every region of Mexico takes on the shape and the form of, you know, local ingredients and you know, what's typically been there due to tradition.
Mm-hmm.
We're a perfect example of that.
Dane was talking about the debate over corn tortillas or flour. Why does that debate exist? In Mexico, flour is traditionally the breakfast tortilla, right?
Yeah, you don't really have to pick sides on that one. Yeah. I think...
Except yes. One is more calories. The flour has more calories.
Well, if you worry about things like that.
Well, some of us need to. And if you have like 8 tacos, it starts to add up.
Wendy's record is 33.
Yeah,
ever hear of that? 33.
Well, I'll give you a little trick. Sometimes a lot of restaurants double up their tortillas the tacos.
Yes.
So if you want to cut back and go on a taco diet, just rip one of them off and have single tortilla tacos. That's what I do.
Well, you look at the popularity of the food. Of course, you got the population, the demographics, but you don't have to be from Pilsen to enjoy great Mexican food. I think we all enjoy it all over the place. But 43 years now, right, for you guys,
right,
for a restaurant. Talk a little bit about kind of the history of it. That's huge in the restaurant business. If you get past 5 years, you're kind of legendary, but 40 years, it's a testament.
Yeah, 40 years is it is a testament. My father founded the restaurant back in 1975. Back then, Pilsen was not a primarily Mexican neighborhood. It was an Eastern European neighborhood. And my dad, like a big wave of immigrants, came here for work in the 60s and saw that there was a need to start giving that Mexican community a taste of back home.
With the Europeans coming in, for many of them, I'm guessing that's the first time they ever had Mexican cuisine, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been blessed to be able to introduce a whole generation of people to our specific dish, which is carnitas. It's a slow-cooked pork dish. It's slow-cooked for over 2 hours. We cook pretty much the whole hog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very regional specialty dish from Michoacan, from the west coast of Mexico.
And so, different types of pork involved
in this?
Yeah,
so carnitas is essentially a catch-all term. When you buy carnitas, it's a little different from buying traditional tacos. Rather than placing an order for tacos per se, you buy meat by the pound. That goes back to the origins of carnitas as a food that was sold in street markets in Mexico. So Saturday and Sunday in Mexico and Sunday morning, typically you'd have these street vendors go out, cook a couple of hogs, bring them to market. Then people would line up first thing in the morning, pick which cuts of meat they'd like. There's ribs, there's pork belly, there's
shoulder.
Yeah, there's pork skin.
Mm-hmm. Elbows. I like a good pork elbow.
Just about everything you can think of. And it goes fast, and people are very particular about what goes in their carnitas.
Can you tell by just, like, if you didn't know what part of the pork you were eating, could you just tell automatically just by tasting it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can?
At this point, yes.
How are you doing that? What are you doing to be able to decipher what's what?
The textures are different. You know, the fat content and a shoulder is much different from a piece of rib meat.
Sometimes with the fat, though, that adds to the flavor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, the fat adds flavor. One of the things that I think we do best is we have pork skin in our carnitas. And mm-hmm. the one that I like the most comes from the rib, mm-hmm. where it's pork skin, but it's also, rather than having just fat, it has a little piece of meat from the top of the ribs on there that gets nice and crispy and brown.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely delicious to put a little bit of that on your taco. It adds a ton of flavor, adds a ton of depth.
Mm.
And it's one of those things that, you know, if you go a little bit more into a deep dive into carnitas and you've never had the real thing, once you try it, you're just going to be like, okay, I'm probably willing to travel to go get the real deal. And that's why we get lines out the door in Pilsen on the weekends.
Are there specific toppings for carnitas, for instance, like a salsa verde as opposed to
There are specific toppings, and it's not your typical salsas, like a salsa verde or salsa roja. The salsa that we've been using for 40-plus years is a jalapeno tomato salsa, but it's very heavy on the jalapenos, including the vinegar that's in the jalapeno. Mm. So that acidity of the salsa works on our carnitas taco because it's a little fattier. It cuts right through the fat. Doesn't work on steak, doesn't work on chicken, doesn't work on other things, but for the purpose of that taco, it is phenomenal.
Real spicy?
No, it's actually pretty mild. I like people to be able to taste our food and you know, not be struggling to, you know, with a scalding tongue. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a food challenge.
No, yeah, so it's pretty on a heat from a the point of view of heat, it's very mild, but it's very, very flavorful. Carnitas actually in Mexico, not traditionally served with a ton of toppings on there. So if you order them, they're not going to come with a ton of cilantro and onion and lime. The idea is for you to really taste the flavor of the meat, the taco. Yeah. You know, let the meat shine through and do its job. Obviously, lime, onion, and cilantro are available, mm-hmm. But we use it very sparingly because you really, you want to be able to taste the, all the hard work that went into crafting the meat.
Tomorrow is National Taco Day. We'll talk more about it next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dane Neal is here. We are celebrating National Taco Day, which is tomorrow. Last year, Americans ate over 4.5 billion tacos. Is that a fact, Jack?
Each?
Well,
that's a lot, Dane. Can't be right.
When you add in the competitive eaters, and then
it makes
kind
sense.
Of the all-you-can-eat places that are out there. Yeah, I guess it averages out.
Yeah,
I would
say
a
lot.
Oftentimes in the segments, we kind of go, deep into the mysteries of the ice cream man, or else, the conspiracies that lead to the pumpkin spice, phenomenon. But sure. I thought this, for Taco Day, as I was thinking of, there was no way to do it without actually bringing some in because tacos make you hungry.
Yes, they do.
We have to talk to Marcos again. He instructed us on how to construct a perfect carnitas. Do I have to say? I don't have to say carnitas taco, right?
Carnitas. No, just carnitas, right?
You could tell the shoulder. That's what you most frequently see, I think, when you get carnitas. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think the shoulder is what everybody traditionally thinks of when they're thinking of
kind of stringy,
Yeah, you go to Chipotle, you get the carnitas, and it's shoulder.
Did you combine some of your meats?
I did.
What'd you do, the shoulder and the rib meat?
I did whatever's in upper left-hand corner and upper right-hand corner. What were those two?
That was pork belly and pork skin.
Yeah, they go well together.
See,
yeah.
I like each of my porks solo, yeah.
Like I like to combine because you...
You do, yes. You get a little of everything.
Yeah.
We talked about some of the sides that are involved, and of course you're going to want to kind of limit them in order to enjoy the flavor of the meat. But also one of the sides that's traditional, and it's, I think, the closest thing that a lot of people may be able to relate to is at the truck stop or at the convenience store, and usually there's a Starburst that says Flamin' Hot on it, is like the pork skins, right? But you've got the chicharrones,
them,
right?
Chicharron.
Here. Yeah,
yeah, it's chicharron to us is something that's really, labor intensive. It's pork skins where we render out the fat and slow cook them over 8 to 10 hours. Then we let them sit overnight, we salt them, and then we flash fry them for 5 minutes. And that oil that's rendered out from the skin of the pork is what we cook the carnitas with. So you can't have one without the other.
What would you say the flavor, I've never had them, what's the flavor reminiscent of? What would it remind me of?
It's like a crisp kind of pork chip is what I would...
You're going to try that? You're brave.
Oh, no, it's they're
in our region of Mexico, in Michoacán, you sit down at a restaurant, and rather than getting chips and salsa, you get chicharrón and
salsa.
That's
really good.
That's how we use it, kind of as a substitute for a chip.
It may be the single crispiest thing I've ever had in my life. It's so crispy.
Yeah, and in Mexico, chicharrón is kind of its own food group. We use it as a protein. So the chicharrón, if you cook it in a salsa, people make tacos out of that as well. They put it in sandwiches and tortas. It's one of those things that you know, really hasn't made its way up on a grand scale to the U.S., but it's very common chicharrón.
Really, that was my nickname in high school, chicharrón. I didn't know if that was good or bad then, but now I know it's good.
It's good.
Because I was crispy.
Well, when it is good, and after maybe 43 years of doing it, you think to yourself, maybe we should open up. You mentioned Lines Around the Block.
That's Wendy, for the record.
Another location, and so you guys are going to do that. You're going to take that step after all of this. You know, you've waited it out. You've decided, hey, maybe there's enough demand out there. You guys are going to have a new spot.
Yeah, we've waited it out. I'm about 4 years into the business myself.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I was a banker.
Oh, wow.
Really? Yeah. What a difference.
Big difference. So I decided to come back into our family restaurant.
Good for you.
And
more fun.
It is a lot of fun.
You don't have to wear a suit and tie, I'm guessing, now.
I'm eating tacos on the radio. I think that would be sitting in my cubicle over on LaSalle Street any day.
You still have a pen clipped to your shirt.
And a calculator.
Some habits die hard, don't they?
Yeah.
Other than, like, if you were going for tacos, so we're all familiar with pork and for chicken and beef and shrimp, but what is the stranger or some of the more stranger things you've seen put on tacos?
There's all kinds of things. In Oaxaca, there's tacos that are made with ant eggs. There's all kinds of... There's grasshopper tacos in Mexico City.
Cow eye tacos?
If you want to get really obscure.
Wow.
That's not these, though.
Have you tried any of those?
I have.
Any of them where you'd go back for a second helping or just a one-time thing?
The ant ones were actually...
Were they really?
Yeah. Oh. Surprisingly good.
I was gonna top you with alligator because I've seen
Thanks
alligator
for
tacos,
ruining all of
but
this
now
for
I can't.
Me.
You win with the
no. There,
ant
there's
eyes.
Some weird stuff out there, but then wow. You know there's.
But this is not included here. It's not
these
on
are
the
pork,
menu.
Wendy. Yeah. You're safe with these.
Yeah, I know,
this
but
is
still,
just pork.
Where do people find you and your restaurant?
We're at 1725 West 18th Street in Pilsen. We're right by the Pink Line train station down there, right across the street, so easy access.
And they're going to be part of Mexico in a Bottle coming up on the 14th, and this Saturday we'll have some of the Mezcal folks on, and we're going to go into it a little bit deeper, too.
Oh, very nice.
I might come visit you on Saturday.
Absolutely. No, there'll be no ant-eye tacos.
Oh.
All right, good.
So get them while you can. Marcos, great to meet you. Thank you so much. Really, love the food. So good.
Is there a website?
Thank you. Yes, website is carnitasuruapanchi.com. A lot easier to find us.
We might need to spell it out. It's URUAPAN,
yep.
Right? That's the correct
spelling.
That's
how you spell it.
Very good. Thanks so much for being here. Dane, great to see you. Thank you so much. A quick break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you so much, Kim Gordon.
I know we have something important to discuss, but can I just tell you something that I don't know if you're aware of? Three times in the last half hour, I don't know if you're telling me or you're telling yourself or anyone, but you have said these words, "Oh, I love pork." You just said that three different times.
I really do. I've always loved pork chops. I make my own pork shoulder for pulled pork, but it's just really
it's
good.
It's just funny to watch you in Nirvana just
I know.
Say that. Oh, pork.
Well, you're like that with lobster. I don't know that I like it better than lobster, but it's really underrated.
Yes. You got to do something about that.
Well, what I'm waiting for today is the text I'm going to get from
pork. Go on.
From Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's going to text everybody.
I know, and I feel a little bad during the crosstalk with the Steve Cochran show today. Cochran mentioned you're going to get a presidential alert text today at 1:18, and I said I've blocked it. The only reason I blocked it is because Clinton used to always text me from the White House.
Did he?
Bill Clinton.
Can you talk about what he was texting
you
with?
No, but I finally had to put a block on that, so I don't know.
So it's not unprecedented.
I'll unblock it to see what the presidential alert's going to be. It's not a political message. It's an emergency test message sent from President Donald Trump. It's part of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency system, to warn the public in cases of national emergencies. First and foremost, we have our EAS tests that we test every month, and then we have alerts in case something happens. It scares me more that the president can text us. That makes me fearful. Let me just say that.
Well, I know what you mean, but who? There has to be a system in place, I guess, by which we're all forewarned of some impending doom. So how do they do it if they don't do it this way? Although you'll know there's if there's an emergency because you'll just see me screaming and running away. So you'll go, something's up. He doesn't usually scream and run away this time of day. I wonder what's going on. So they have to kind of call it something. But
yeah, but why wasn't it before? Why does it have to begin now? And is he going to tweet, you know, I mean, is he going to text us some, like...
Take a shot at Rosie O'Donnell?
No, or maybe
everybody
Christine
run, except you, Rosie
Ford
O'Donnell.
Again.
Yeah, you know, he did that two days ago.
I know, and this is the president. Yesterday. Wouldn't I mean, who knows? Wouldn't it be funny, haha, if all of a sudden he like texted something at 1:18, like knock knock or something? This is a serious thing.
This is serious, yes.
A majority of cell phone users will receive this alert Wednesday, October 3rd. The header is going to say presidential alert. And the message, this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. So now it's the NWEAS, N-W-E-A-S. No action is needed. The alert was initially scheduled to occur Thursday, September 20th, but FEMA spokesman Mark Peterson told CNN that the test was postponed. October 3rd was the alternate date for this test.
I think you said at the beginning of this, the majority of Americans...
Yeah.
So how do they decide who is and is not receiving this text?
Funny you should ask, because I have the answer ready. More than 100 carriers, including the largest carriers, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, will participate in this alert test, says FEMA. They'll also run a test of the EAS, Emergency Alert System, for radio and television the same day, beginning 2 minutes after the WEA test. So that's interesting. So that's coming up on the TV and radio 2 minutes after this.
Mm-hmm.
The agency is required by law to conduct a nationwide test of its public alert systems no less than once every 3 years. FEMA is also tasked with ensuring that the president can alert the public under all conditions in cases of national emergencies, including natural disasters and terrorist threats. I hope he doesn't start using this thing more frequently, you know, because if I get a text that says presidential alert, I'm going to think something terrible has happened.
Mm.
And if it's just something...
Do you think he'd be the president that cried wolf? Is that what you think?
I hope not.
Just use it anytime he felt like it?
I hope not.
Well, is there a chance of anybody receiving this that doesn't isn't forewarned that it's just a test? Will anybody panic when they hear this or see this?
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, if we weren't talking about it now, I don't know how
it
informed everyone is.
It didn't get much press until a day or so ago. I didn't know it was going to happen until just a few days ago.
So more than 100 carriers will participate in this emergency alert test again. And I thought I read somewhere that it's 1:18 that it's going to happen. But I don't have that information here.
1:18 Central Time?
That's a good question.
Hmm. All right.
So we'll have to see.
I will wait patiently.
I remember looking yesterday. It was 1:18 our time because I remember being bummed that we were off the air.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah. You wanted it to happen live on the show.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's more exciting.
It's historic. It's something unusual. Presidential alert, be looking for it. It will then say this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System.
Will John Williams get a text from Teddy Roosevelt? I don't know if his texting is set up differently than the rest of us, but there's a chance that he will.
What about Thomas Jefferson?
He might also text him.
Well, he's going to be backed up. Which message will get through?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
I'm not sure how that plays out.
All right. Well, so far, I haven't gotten anything. Although, I am getting nonstop that I am arrested and the authorities are going to take me into custody.
You're getting texts that say this?
I'm getting voicemails.
Oh.
Like,
what's your crime?
Like, two a day. I just deleted a bunch of them. But, yes, I was. I'm going to be the authorities are going to come and take me into custody because there's something that they've been trying to get in touch with me for the last 6 months, and I've defaulted. So now there's a lawsuit, and they're going to come apprehend me.
Oh no, that's horrible news.
Here's the thing: I've not done anything.
Well,
not for air.
Right, right. Everyone has their secrets,
but not to be apprehended.
How upsetting that must be for you.
The first eight made me nervous.
Yeah.
And then after that, you get used to it.
You realized it's just a ploy. What are they trying to get you to do? I know they want you to call a number, but once you call that number, what'll happen? The next time you get one, you should follow through and see what happens.
No, you do it.
I'm not wanted for any crimes.
Get Dave Savini to do it.
All right.
All I know is that my oldest son, Michael, pointed this out, that it's your area code and the first three digits of your phone number every time I get these.
That's who's calling you?
Yeah. It's like the last four digits are different than my phone number. So obviously it's some kind of algorithm that is setting up my area code and my prefix.
Yeah.
Because I never, after getting all these and seeing them, I didn't notice that it was my area code and the first three digits of my cell phone.
I don't understand how they're translating this. Like, in a best case scenario, they're going to take advantage of you in some way, but I don't know what their goal is. They want your money, but
they want your credit card number. We've gone through this before.
So you, to get out of going to jail for whatever crime you did or didn't commit, must give them some sort of
even if it's only like $100, then they have my credit card number.
Right. I say give it to them.
I'll just give them yours.
Just give it to them. Come on. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You have gotten this message because you have, and plus it's very computerized like that.
It sounds like a computer is calling you.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they go with a regular person so it doesn't scare you?
Because they can do millions of calls at once. They just set it up. You are going to be apprehended by authorities if you don't call this number. It's kind of like that. So beware, be careful. Susie, this has happened to you?
I get that all the time. I get that call, and they say, you know, call back right away or you'll be apprehended. So I've been getting them for a couple of years, and I just deleted. But at the beginning, I was scared. But one time, which is bad, I did get a phone call, and they said, hello, is this Susie Blank? This is the FBI, and I hung up. Then I get a call again. Hello, Susie. Is this Susie so-and-so? This is the FBI, and I hung up again. Third time, they said, don't hang up. This is the FBI. And I said, well, how'd you get my number? And they said, because we're the FBI.
Okay. Good answer.
And then I, of course, had a laugh when they said that. But the point is, they had a situation. I'm an artist, and I didn't know I had some paintings stolen. It had my name on it, and there was an international art ring that they found that steals things, and they took my paintings of all things, like 30 of them, but from different locations, because I do reproductions sometimes of famous paintings. And these were stupid criminals. They were apprehended because they took fakes. But
the FBI was
in Chicago. They have an office, and they had us come down to claim and identify it. But yes, so when you get these calls, here was a case where I didn't believe who was on the phone,
and it was for real.
It was real, right?
All right, because I also got one from, you have to call us back or your Microsoft Windows services will be stopped, and you will not be able to use your computer anymore.
Hmm.
Right, I get the same thing. And the first time I got nervous, oh my God, and I was believing it, but then I said, no, I have an Apple. I don't have Microsoft.
Wow, you're off the hook.
You know, so I realized, you know, this is crazy, but, you know, I don't know what the purpose is that they do this. I don't understand.
That's
it.
What Bill's question is, too.
Because there's no follow-through, but I've blocked the number, but then they just come back with another phone number that they call.
Yeah. Right.
And if I could understand, but I think when we answer the phone, if we talk, it shows them that it's a real number, and they could proceed with other issues. Oh, I don't know what they
maybe.
Do.
Susie, thanks for
Be
the call.
Be careful out there. Thank you, Susie.
Was Susie. I'm not sure it was. Here's a text. Wendy, get an app called Mr. Number. It recognizes scam phone calls. Here's another good one.
But how do I know that's not scamming me?
Mr. Number wouldn't scam anybody.
Why?
Because he cares about you. 219 says, tell them that your credit card number is 123456789. And then when they tell you that that's a fake number, say, yes, it is, and that's the number I will always use when you call me. I think that says
that
it all.
That is pretty good.
Yeah. If you want to do this to me, I'll play the game with you.
And you can block these numbers. I did. I've been just blocking them. But yesterday I got three of these calls.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. When I think I've told you this. When my daughters were little, we taught them that whenever we got one of those phone calls, they would answer the phone. And we would see how long my daughter could keep them on the phone telling them what happened in school that day. She would just go class to class, talk about the homework assignment, who said what in class. It worked like a charm.
That's better than being on the do not call list, because they will tell right. their colleagues, right. don't call this house.
You're going to talk to some third graders who had a long day at school.
Sandy is an IT person. Sandy, you can explain why and how this happens.
Right. Well, so what they actually, I actually have pretended I was doing it and gone through the steps so that I kind of know where it's going.
Yeah.
So what they ask you to do, and they pretend that everybody they talk to, regardless, is a complete idiot. and so, Bill, it would work for you.
Thank you, Sandy. That's nice of you. Thank you.
they have you go through a series of steps, which then opens a particular Microsoft program, and then they have you delete it as though it were dangerous. And then your computer stops working. Then they can call you, then they can tell you, and if such and such happens, call us back, and then they'll charge you money to get your computer to work again. That's how they do it.
So they're holding your computer hostage, basically.
Well, essentially, yeah.
Isn't that even called hostageware? Didn't this happen
before? I think so,
before?
Yeah.
Or rant?
But no, but that's a completely different thing. That is when you're on the internet and certain sites have not very good spam virus checkers on their websites. And so when you go to the website and open the web page, it can, because it's downloading pictures, it can download something that locks your computer.
Ah. Then they have you.
These guys want you to do it to yourself.
Well, sometimes I do.
All right, Wendy.
Sandy, thank you for calling.
That's why you're going to jail.
I'm not going to jail.
I think you are going to jail.
All right.
I'll visit you.
We have to be super quick here. One more. John, go ahead. You got 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds, real quick. I have. Get the same calls you've gotten with different things. I've also had calls, people calling me saying, please stop calling me. So your number can also be used from time to time to call others in this malicious manner.
Oh, like they're logging in so the caller ID will show my number, so I'll be getting in trouble.
Yeah, I've had two calls. People called me and said, don't call me back, and I didn't know who they were.
That's freaky.
Ingenious.
All right, well, be prepared for the presidential alert that's coming over at 1:18 this afternoon. Don't call back, though.
Okay.
All right. Hello.
Thanks,
John.
How ingenious, though, to turn it on to somebody else who has no hand in this at all. That's smart.
They're getting so good.
Yeah.
Fake friends on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Fontana, I thought I was already friends with. I am in real life. I didn't know if I was on Facebook.
Right.
I noticed I'm not friends with him anymore. So is this account of... I don't know. There's a second account going around. Beware of Frank Fontana.
Yeah, everybody stay away from Frank Fontana until further notice.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon. It's all happening from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and it's all happening right here, 720 WGN.